All right, ladies and gentlemen, why don't we go ahead and get started? Good morning, everybody. This is the Wednesday, September 7th, 2022, morning session of the Portland City Council. We apologize to everybody for the slight technical delay, but we think we have it all ironed out. Keelan, please call the roll.
Good morning. Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps. Here.
Maps.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Ryan. Wheeler.
Here. And now we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Welcome to the Portland City Council. City Council is holding hybrid public meetings with limited in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on the council clerk's webpage at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or the first readings of ordinances. In-person testimony may occur from one of several locations, including City Council Chambers and the Lovejoy Room at City Hall and the Portland Building. Written testimony may be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Thank you.
Thank you. First up is communications. First individual, please. Keelan, item number 743.
Request of Karen Munn to address council regarding support for emergency greenway development at Southwest Troy Street and Southwest Canby Court.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me all right?
Karen, are you muted?
Okay, great. I know you have a lot on your plates, and so I really appreciate your time.
Sorry,
thank
Karen,
you very much.
Hang on. Karen, sorry to interrupt just a moment. We're yes. not hearing in chambers. Open signal.
For the tech people out there, I can hear.
Yeah, Commissioner Mapps, can you keep talking? We want to make sure we adjust the volume.
Absolutely. Hello, everybody. Good morning.
Good.
Glad to be here.
All right, good. Now we can hear you. Karen, do you want to try again and see if we can hear you?
Right, I'll just continue. So I live on a local
Karen, I'm sorry. Can you start over? Because we weren't able to hear the first part. So we'll give you 3 full minutes, but if you could just start from the beginning.
Okay. thank you very much for your time. I know you have a lot on your plate. And so I just wanted to bring this one matter to your attention because it is a potential safety issue. And that is that I live on a local service street that was a proposed neighborhood greenway. And it was, in fact, it was the featured neighborhood greenway on Southwest in Motion's brochure. And it was for good reason. It's a very sensical neighborhood greenway. It's already a bikeway, a numbered urban trailsway, a perfect connector between Barber Boulevard Transit and Multnomah Village. And it's unfortunately is also plagued with high traffic, upwards of 3,000 cars per day, very fast traffic, even though it's supposed to be a slow street, safe street. And it's also has no sidewalks, which is understandable. Sidewalks are expensive, and but it has in some areas no ravine, narrow passage, blind S-curves. It's just an accident waiting to happen. The street also happens to be the featured neighborhood greenway because it scores between 4 and 5 in equity. It has one of the highest equities of all the area. So you have a lot of residents that depend on the street to walk to grocery store, don't have cars. But what is of most important now? I wish Commissioner Ryan was in because this street is 200 feet from the SRV, the Safe Rest Village. And we have frequent residents going up and down the street now. And I just see that as an accident waiting to happen. They go to the food bank in Multnomah Village or go to transit and they're on the street. It's fast, aggressive drivers. The drivers have been noted to be very aggressive. Unfortunately, my proposed street has been moved to 2-3 years down the road, even though the richest neighborhood in town, Montgomery and Vista, was superseded my project. So may I continue or?
Karen, could you do me a favor just for my own edification? I think I got the gist of it, but could you just summarize what it is you're asking the council to do?
Thank you.
Thank
you very much. So I'm asking for your help in possibly looking into moving this project forward because it is a safety issue, and especially now that the SRV residents are in the area and they're using it, it's even more of a reason to.
Okay, that now I get. Okay, great.
That's my gist for being here. Already something on the proposal, and it's to be minted somehow, not necessarily as a neighborhood greenway, but because water rushes off the street and floods out my basement and yard. And so it's proposed to have something done in a couple more years. But now we have the element of the SRV residents, and that makes it even more of a dangerous situation.
Okay. Yeah. And I got that. Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks, Karen. We appreciate it. Thanks for bringing that to our attention and the drainage issue. Also, I can understand why that's frustrating. Next individual, please, Keelan, item 744.
Request of Robert Butler to address council regarding safety on Southeast Division Street.
Good morning.
I guess I'm on now. I'm Robert Butler, resident of City of Portland, not a lobbyist. So you know how my speech starts. Ukrainians are dying to say freedom while we are killing freedom. So the title to my talk probably could be PBOT effectively stands for the Portland Bureaucracy of Oppressive Transportation Department. PBOT is in collusion with TriMet to PO everyone in the city trying to drive or park their vehicles. This is to deter and obstruct the use of cars and trucks in our city. All of this is in the ideology of climate extremism. I mentioned the ideology of PBOT in what I call the invasion of the medians of our transportation by PBOT medians. And this is to discourage commerce and automobile use, but no thought of how the trucks are going to deal with the new obstructions. So I want to give you an example of a truck obstruction. There is a plumbing warehouse on about 125-60 Southeast Division, one block before the signal at 127th. Now, when you leave that building after dropping off freight, to get back on Division to go south or west, to get back on the, forget it. You're not going to do that. You're in for the detour, if you like. So instead of turning left on Division, now you get to go up to the next signal, right, 100 feet up, and turn right on 157th, and then go all the way down to Powell. And at Powell, there's a real tight turn. If you have a small truck, you can make it. If you have a big truck, it better call information, because you're not going to get through there. And from there, then you go all the way down to I. Then you go all the way back to the 205 exit Division, and there you're back to practically where you started after a long detour. When people leave their houses, it's the same thing. When they get off their street, they're going to have to take a detour. They can't go left. They have to go right down to a traffic signal or somewhere, do a U-turn, and then come back. The point of all this is that this oppression is making everybody furious. It's causing road rage. It's causing accidents. It's increasing the climate warming because of the detours. And it's something that's not good for our city.
All right. Thank you, Robert.
We have to look for better solutions to climate control.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Keelan, next individual, 745, please.
Request of Fatima Magmadova to address council regarding left turn option at Southeast Division Street and Southeast 109th Avenue.
Good morning.
Good morning. For record, I'm Fatima Magmadova, owner of Roman Russian Food Store. On February 10th this year, I found out PBOT's dirty secret. Raymore construction workers told me the details about replacing existing safety lane with concrete barrier median in the front of our store. That day, I immediately got into action. I hired engineers, attorneys, and prepared presentations for city council by requesting pause on this project to consider alternative engineering design to protect our left turn into 109th Avenue. On Tuesday, August 9th, Sam Adams from Mayor's office sent email to Matt Grum, who is Government Affairs Manager for PBOT, with carbon copy to me and Tom Miller, Director of Livability from Mayor's office. The subject was Roman-Russian market pending layoffs. Importance? High. After that, Mr. Grum's silence was deafening. On August 24th, I stood outside with my employees watching in horror the pouring of the 100-foot-long concrete median. Also to my horror was seeing the lie that PBOT made that the median was to be poured in segments. Further was the lie that the segments will be on pins to facilitate future removal segment by segment as justified. Today, we have 100-foot-long median blocking our store from our customers. Customers who are minorities, immigrants, and majority of them do not speak English. They lost their parking ability. They are blocked from turning left. Instead, they have to detour four blocks to a more dangerous and narrow U-turn. What does all of this mean to our Slavic community? It means that our voices are not important nor heard. This is culmination of an ideological plan to ignore the public outcry and let them suffer. I fled Soviet Union to find freedom. And now I find in Portland, we are rapidly losing our freedom. It is obvious to everybody that Division Street transportation plan is terrible. Meanwhile, the commissioner's office at full speed ahead to replicate Division Street disaster to 7 miles of 82nd Avenue. As Joanne Hardesty says, I'm sick and tired of this supremacy. Now it's my turn to say I'm sick and tired of the supremacy, and I demand inclusiveness and equity for Slavic community. Thank you.
Thank you. Next individual, please. Keelan, item 746.
Request of Evelyn Ross to address council regarding ongoing concern with individuals living on private orchard property.
Good morning.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
All right. I live in a my parking lot is right across the street is an orchard, and behind the orchard is private property where homeless people have been camping out. They go all the way down to the train tracks camping out. There has been fires here, and the officers have wished that they knew who owned the property to get the homeless out of there. I found out that Pacific Union Railroad owns the property. I gave you the phone number, person to contact. The thing is that I haven't been able to contact that person because I called the headquarters and they said this person's in charge of Portland. But I've never been able to contact this person to let them know that not only is it a safety hazard, you know, fire-wise, fire department has come out several times. The fire had gone up against a neighbor's fence on the other side of the orchard. Then just about a month ago, I saw like a bonfire going off. And I had to call the fire department for that out where the homeless are. And it's at night, you hear cars honking, and I'll go outside because I'm right there where the cars are honking, where the homeless are, the other side. And there'll be cars honking and are blasting their radio going in to see the homeless people. And so they're after 10 o'clock at night, they're blasting their music or honking their horns, going in or taking people in to the orchard, behind the orchard, for people to stay there and be homeless. This is an ongoing issue. It's a safety hazard for us residents because we are just right across the parking lot is the orchard, and behind the orchard is the homeless people. And they go all the way down to the train tracks, and there's most likely debris and everything. I've never gone back there. But it is something that needs attention, and the officers wish they knew who owned it because they know it's a hazard. And but so not only is a concern for the residents here, but the officers are concerned too, and they want the right people to be contacted to get these people out.
Evelyn, thank you. And I'll, in my check-in with the police chief, I'll ask about this issue. I haven't been, it hasn't been brought to my attention up to this point, but as the officer indicated, our ability to go onto private property is very limited, but obviously the manifestations of the problem are pouring off into the public right-of-way, so I'll discuss it with the chief, and I appreciate your presence today.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Next individual, please, Keelan, item 747.
Request of Michael Trimble to address council regarding constituent outreach to commissioner's office.
Hi, Michael.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for having me. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear, and we can see you as well.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Okay, this is addressed to Commissioner Hardesty. Had you responded or even read the multiple emails and calls I left to re-election campaign, including the many social media posts I tagged you in, you'd know that I ran for governor, and like you, I lost. I placed fifth out of the 15 candidates that ran in the Democratic gubernatorial primary. I was the only candidate who was talking about tackling the unaffordable housing crisis, which has devastated so many of us renters, myself included. I appreciate your pro-tenant advocacy, but you make it very difficult to vote for you when you ignore interest and correspondence from a potential voter like myself. Unlike you, I did not have a re-election campaign staff or public office staff. But despite this disadvantage, I responded to every email, phone call, and social media tag and mention, all while working full-time. Not all of us, like Tina Kotick or Betsy Johnson, could afford to quit our full-time jobs to focus running for governor full-time. It is fair to say that I received more correspondence than you ever will receive in your lifetime, unless, of course, you run for governor. Interestingly enough, the few social media posts I tagged your opponent, Renee Gonzalez, did receive likes from him. I don't know if it was from him personally or somebody from a staff, but somebody in the Gonzalez world took the time to actually read my social media post that he was tagged in, something you didn't do and still don't do. I agree with you more politically than I do with Gonzalez, but at this point, your refusal and insistence on ignoring voters like me who want to vote for you is securing Gonzalez's election. Let's not forget, Commissioner, that more people voted against you in your primary, myself included, than for you. You cannot afford to alienate a single voter in the general election. We are told that the way we hold our elected officials accountable is by reaching out to them. But when an elected official refuses to even acknowledge said constituent, then the only choice left is to vote against his own interests by voting for that elected official's opponent. Are you really going to make me do this, Commissioner Hardesty? I want to vote for you, but you're making it very hard. If I could take the time to respond to all of the feedback I got, I even responded to Republican voters who I knew would never vote for me. But if somebody takes the time to reach out to me, I think it's appropriate to respond to them. And I really want to vote for you. I appreciate all of the things you've done. But again, I can't vote for somebody who doesn't respond to constituent correspondence.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Michael, I really appreciate you being here today. Let me be really clear. I have actually prided my office on having the best constituent response in the 3+ years I've been here. You may know that my constituent relations person had the opportunity after 3 years to get another job, and I supported her in that effort. And in fact, we are in the process now. We had a new position available. We had 50 applicants, I'm happy to say. So clearly people want to work in my office. And I am this week actually interviewing the final candidates. And Michael, let me say, as much as I would love to personally respond to every constituent issue, it would be absolutely impossible for any individual to do so with the magnitude of constituent correspondence that I receive. But again, I will end where I started, which is I have a proud record of being very responsive to the community I serve, which is why I believe they will continue to support my efforts while I'm in this seat. Again, thanks for being here today. My apologies that you weren't responded to as quickly as you had thought you should have been. But again, you know, there are a lot of people who are looking for a lot of responses. And again, thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you. And the main reason I was reaching out to you campaign was I thought we could hold some events together because, again, you're pro-tenant advocacy, as am I. And I really thought we could be some power horses, no pun intended. But thank you for your response, Commissioner. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And again, thank you for your effort and thank you for still believing democracy is possible.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Michael. All right, so that completes communications. Which items have been pulled from the consent agenda, please?
Two items have been pulled, 750 and 752.
And 752. And for the record, could you read 750, please?
Accept bid of OpConnect Inc. for the charging as a service project for $3,492,600.
Very good. And there is interest in having a public discussion. Director Taylor is not available today. So what I'd like to do is pull that item and move it to next week's consent, or well, let's move it to the regular agenda for next week if we could do that.
Okay.
Great. Any objection to that? Seeing none. We'll do that for 750. Please call the roll on item 751.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye.
Rubio?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The ordinance is adopted, and 752 will take up at the end of the regular agenda. With that, we'll go to the time certain agenda, please. Item number 748.
Authorize applications to the U.S. Department of Transportation for 3 grants not to exceed $47 million to provide critical transportation improvements.
Commissioner Hardesty.
I am thrilled today to present to council this agenda item. This agenda item actually allows us to apply for very specific federal grants that will assist us in doing major transportation projects as we move forward. We have an excellent panel of presenters that will present to us today. Not sure if I'm turning it over to Mark first, which he's giving me a thumbs up, I am. Let me just say, if we are successful in achieving these grants, the city of Portland will achieve many of the transportation milestones that we envision as we come out of this pandemic, as we start imagining what the city of Portland will be in the future. And so without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Mark. I'm going to let the panel speak, and I look forward to us answering any questions that my colleagues may have as we move forward. Mark, take it away.
Thank you, Commissioner and Mayor, for the introduction. It's an honor for me to be here and be part of this team to present these three grants today that the city is proposing with your support to move forward with, as well as support for ODOT-led grant at the Rose Quarter with the support of Albina Vision that's also here to talk about that today. Let me share this PowerPoint. Give you a little bit more background on the projects. So this ordinance, as I just mentioned, gives the city the authority to move forward with three grants totaling $47 million and support the ODOT-led Reconnecting Communities Grant Project. The good news is that after decades or a long, long time of waiting, we now have $550 billion of additional federal funding that's going for new programs. $110 billion of that is really focused on roads and bridges. That's really good news. It's also great news that, you know, that we now have that ability to, you know, use existing resources to leverage additional revenue. The challenging part of this additional revenue is that more than I've ever seen in my 26 plus years of working for the city on grant related work is the amount of competition that's out there right now from all of the different local communities that are desperate to get a little bit of this infrastructure investment is as fierce and competitive as I've seen. The good news is, and you'll hear more about this in a second, Kristen described some of the projects, is we've had our sleeves rolled up for a while in Portland, and we've developed some really good projects that we think can move forward. And we've creatively used some of our existing funds to pay for match. That's going to continue to be a problem for local governments as we move forward with this Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act, or the Bipartisan Infrastructure Laws, as it's often called. But right now, we think we're in a strong position with some very competitive projects. I'm going to turn it over to Kristen, who will provide a little bit more background on the specific projects that we're proposing to move forward with.
Good morning. I'm Kristen Hull. I'm the Planning Division Manager at PBOT, and I'm pleased to talk with you today about three opportunities that PBOT would like to pursue for grant funding for important infrastructure needs. Mark, do you want to move to the next slide? Thank you. The first one is 122nd Avenue. This is a safety grant application. 122nd Avenue is a major safety issue in our city. It's one of the top 5% in the top 5% of most dangerous streets in the region, and is a high crash corridor in the city of Portland. Over the last few years, PBOT has been completing work on a corridor plan that recommends a variety of safety improvements, street lighting infill, crossings, speed reader boards to help manage speed, signal upgrades that manage speed and safety, intersection improvements, transit stop improvements, looking at ways to address the urban heat island effect in East Portland with new street trees, and a roadway reorganization, reducing the lanes from 5 to 3 south of Powell. PBOT, though, at this moment only has funding for a paving project in part of that area and a few crossings. Next slide, Mark. When the Safe Streets and Roads for All grant opportunity arose, we realized that we could possibly leverage that local funding into about a $25 million investment in 122nd. This is a huge change for us in being able to really realize the safety vision in this corridor. That local funding would be our local match. And then we'd be able to advance really our Vision Zero equity and climate strategies by transforming this corridor into a safer street. One of the nice things about this grant is it is flexible enough to allow us to continue to work with the community to refine the project elements after the grant award, so we can continue our project development activities funded by the grant. The application is due September 15th. Our funding would be available in 2023, and we'd have construction completed by 2027. So this is a huge opportunity for the Bureau. Next slide. The next thing I want to talk about is the Central East Side Rail Crossing Elimination Study. If you travel through the Central East Side, you may have experienced delays related to freight trains running through the district. There are long blockages at 8th, 11th, 12th between Stark and Clay, and they become longer and more frequent as the Union Pacific Railroad has changed the way they operate their trains. This has generated a high level of community concern and has impacts for all street users, whether you are walking, biking, driving a car or truck, moving freight, or riding a TriMet bus. This really affects the reliability of buses, including the new Division Bus Rapid Transit, Division FX. So next slide. We would like to apply for a planning grant from the Rail Crossing Elimination Program at kind of a $1 million, $1.5 million level to do a comprehensive study of these rail crossings and do project development on early investments so that we can be ready to apply for construction funding in the next cycle. This is an important big picture look at the problem overall so that we have a clear roadmap for how we want to address this problem holistically. And the application here is due October 4th. The third grant we are applying for, or would like to apply for, is a $15 million project to replace a bridge on North Burgard Road over the Union Pacific Railroad. This is a key entry point to the Rivergate Industrial Area at the kind of in this boundary between St. John's and the industrial area. This is a very competitive grant program. It's in the Federal Bridge Investment Program in a category set aside for bridges that are under $100 million. It would require a 20% local match. And as you can see in the picture in the lower right of your screen, this bridge is in very poor condition. That's actually the bottom of the bridge. And you can see that it's been hit and has some significant damage. The project would also allow us to improve bike and pedestrian connectivity by changing the configuration of the bridge with the rebuild. Next slide. I'm going to hand it to Caitlin Reff to talk about our I-5 Rose Quarter and Albina Vision related requests.
Good morning, Council. Thank you, Kristen. For the record, I'm Caitlin Reff, PBOT Major Projects and Partnerships Manager. Happy to be here today. We have been to Council a few times recently related to our work in Albina, both on the ODOT-led I-5 Rose Quarter project and then in June with the Albina Vision Trust work session. So we've been continuing to advance this partnership work related to the Rose Quarter project specifically, really taking a focused look at the local street connectivity, local street safety and active transportation design and development of highway covers over I-5. And we are also continuing to develop a work plan type approach to advance priority actions for the city in support of the Albina Vision Trust Community Investment Plan. So today we're here to talk about this new USDOT grant opportunity called the Reconnecting Communities Pilot Program. The pilot was created by the Infrastructure and Investment Jobs Act. It's a new federal program that allocates $1 billion over 5 years. And the projects are, or the dollars are specifically for projects that restore connectivity to communities that are cut off from economic opportunities by major transportation infrastructure, for projects that have solutions to help knit communities back together. So while the highway covers alone certainly cannot undo all of the damage that has been done in Albina, this grant opportunity provides federal funding opportunity for the highway cover specifically as a central kind of reconnecting feature for the future of the neighborhood. So first, the city and Albina Vision Trust are supporting an ODOT-led grant for construction of the highway cover. The grant request will be for $100 million in initial funding. Any award of Reconnecting Communities pilot funding would represent kind of an initial investment in the total highway cover cost, which is another reason why it's really important for us to focus on this funding opportunity and for the team to pull this together, and that scoring well in the Reconnecting Communities pilot program also gives higher level prioritization for future other federal funding opportunities. And then next slide, we are also working with the Albina Vision Trust on developing a planning grant that could help advance some of the core city planning activities in partnership with community to really identify the next steps and more place-based strategies that would leverage the newly connected local streets and new land that will be created by constructing the highway covers. So the planning grant is the total allocation is $50 million. It will likely be more in the range of $1 million. We are continuing to work on this. And so this is just kind of a quick introduction. We will actually be returning to council with Alpine Vision Trust prior to the submittal deadline of October 15th. That is my final slide.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me just say that I don't know if it has actually escaped us how significant the three projects are that are in front of us today. The fact that we would be able to actually make 122nd Avenue a safe street is a huge improvement for the community, those who live, work, and worship in that area. And let me just say that if you'd have told me a year and a half ago that we would be here in partnership with ODOT, Albina Vision Trust, and PBOT, I would have told you that you were out of your mind. But the reality is that the Rose Quarter project is now in a place where we have the potential to get significant federal resources to help reimagine how we reconnect the community that was torn apart by previous freeway expansion projects. I don't want us to miss that this is huge. And if we get just a piece of what we're after, we're going to be on the road towards really making a difference that will be climate resilient, that will be multimodal, and that will benefit the people who live, worship, and work in the city today. So I just couldn't be prouder of the work that PBOT has done to get us to this point. And we are happy to answer any questions that you may have on this project. I'll turn it back to you, Mayor.
Great, thank you. And I concur, Commissioner. I think this is great work on behalf of the city, and I'm grateful that we're at this point where we are. I did have a couple of questions. The first is sort of a process one. I assume that these projects have all been identified through JPACT as regional projects of significance. And so we not only have the seal of approval from the city and those of us here on this council, but we have the region's support for this as well. Is that's correct, is it not, Commissioner?
That is absolutely correct, Mayor.
Very good. And my second is more of just a historical question, and that is regarding the railroad overpass. That is the one that was struck by an oil train some number of years ago. And I'm curious to know, I was actually surprised that we're still in the process of trying to fix that. Why hasn't the railroad paid for it?
I'm going to turn it over to you, Mark. let me just say that we're still in negotiations with the federal government about their liability and responsibility to make that happen. Mm-hmm. Is that an accurate response, Mark?
Yeah, Commissioner, I think that is an accurate response. I can follow up too for some additional information, but the last I've heard that, you know, we're still in those negotiations. So
What's
trying
to
solve the problem?
What's to negotiate? I mean, the overpass had been there for decades. It had been successfully navigated by every other oil train that went under the overpass. Is it their contention that it suddenly moved and jumped in front of their train? What happened?
And Mr. Mayor, if I could also, Mark, could you clarify,
Mayor, sure.
who are you negotiating with? Are you negotiating with the feds, or are you negotiating with the railroad?
I don't want to act like I'm the person that's in these negotiations, but I have been party to some of these conversations in the past. The short story, and lots of you probably heard this, is the way the railroads established the relationship between local governments, you know, goes back to a long, long time ago. And they've sort of set things up in a way that allows them to negotiate in ways that other parties aren't able to, without getting into lots of the details. So those are the kinds of things that we're working on. I would say that on a positive note, You know, we are partnering with UPRR on this rail grant. And so as much as I think in my past, at least, there was a lot of this, you know, you'd have these meetings, you'd be like, ah, we got to work with the railroad, and hands would kind of go up. I think that there's some changes on this front. So I'm optimistic, but I'm generally an optimistic person, that good. There's some hope, but I could follow up with you on the with more details.
That's, I'm glad to hear that.
And I think I would say that this bridge needs to be replaced regardless of that incident. It was built in 1930. It's been rehabilitated multiple times. It's seismically not resilient. So regardless of that that incident that took it from poor to very poor condition, it was a bridge that we needed to attend to, regardless of that piece.
Very, very good. And has there been any learning with regard to what caused that accident in the first place? Because I don't want to, you know, look, I have a lot of respect for the railroad. I don't mean any disrespect, but that was an oil train. And the outcome could have been much, much worse than it actually was. And I never really got a satisfactory answer as to why it happened.
I'd be happy maybe to follow up on that. I don't have the answer to that question.
But I would like to know the answer to that question.
That's great.
Excuse me, Mayor. My apologies. We actually did have invited guests that I neglected to allow to speak prior to us asking questions.
Let's do that. Then, Commissioner Mapps, I think you're next, and then Commissioner Rubio after that. But we'll go to the invited guest, Commissioner.
Okay, my apologies. So we have Winter Yajanis from Albina Vision Trust, Adriana Falcon Gonzalez from Getting There Together Coalition, and Metro Councilor Duncan Wang. Welcome all. Why don't we start with you, Metro Councilor?
Great, thank you so much. And good morning, Mayor Wheeler and members of council. Thank you for the opportunity today to share my support for the grant application to fund improvements along 122nd Avenue. As the Metro Councilor for District 6, a portion of 122nd Avenue runs along my community. And also as the community development director at Apano, many of our community members live and work along 122nd Avenue, including a substantial refugee community from Southeast Asia. 122nd Avenue is a bustling corridor that runs from the north edge of the city nearly all the way to the south. It serves as an important route for people in East Portland to get the jobs, services, and community destination. It's also a high crash corridor in the top 5% of the most deadly and high injury streets in the Portland metro area. For these reasons, the corridor has become a high priority for funding and was considered a top priority during the development of the Let's Get Moving 2020 ballot measure. Metro and J-PACT have recognized the need for additional funding along 122nd Avenue to address safety issues, and regional flexible funding allocation dollars were recently awarded to fund 4 street crossings in Northeast Portland. However, 122nd Avenue is in dire need of much greater level of investment. And, you know, as someone that lives and works along 82nd Avenue, I am very excited about the new investment coming to the corridor, but 82nd Avenue is where East Portland starts, and we can't just stop there. I hope you will support this proposal as an important step toward transforming this dangerous corridor with a process designed to give more opportunities for the community to continue to weigh in on specific improvements. Thank you so much for your time.
Next, Winter.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and members of council. My name is Winter Yohannes, and I have the privilege of serving as the executive director of the Albina Vision Trust. I'm here to offer really brief comments in support of the applications to the U.S. Department of Transportation, and in particular would like to highlight the portion that relates to the Reconnecting Communities Grants Program. As you heard from Caitlin, we will be back to talk more about the planning grant that we will submit together. But today, just want to provide a little bit of context and reaffirm that the city's support over the last 5 years to make sure that together with partners, we ensure that the I-5 Rose Quarter Improvement Project addresses both the physical and financial scars caused by the freeway has left us actually in a really strong position today. Our collective efforts preceded federal recognition and the existence of federal funds specifically targeted towards addressing the harmful legacy of 20th century urban freeways in diverse neighborhoods. But because we committed as a region to doing the right thing proactively, we are now positioned to be really competitive nationally to take advantage of this historic and reparative opportunity. As you heard in some of the testimony during the IGA, when the IGA came to council, the construction of the freeway covers alone will not meet the objectives we've set forward, but it is a really critical important, which is why we are supporting both the construction grant to build the freeway covers and then the planning grant to make sure that what happens afterwards meets the objectives of the community and the vision for Lower Albina. So we'll be back later in the month to share more about the planning grant, but thank you as always for your steadfast support.
And last but not least, Adriana Falcon Gonzalez.
Good morning, Mayor and members of council. Thank you for having me. My name is Adriana Falcon Gonzalez, and I'm the Getting There Together Coalition Manager, known as GTT. GTT is a multicultural, multi-generational coalition that centers and uplifts the voices and needs of people most impacted by transportation inequities through education, advocacy, access, and leadership. I'm here to share that GTT strongly supports the PBOT Safe Streets and Roads for All implementation grant application that will enable safety improvements on 122nd Avenue. Currently, high travel speeds, a mix of transportation modes, and auto-oriented design on this wide arterial street contribute to traffic safety issues that disproportionately impact road users. The street is one of the busiest and most important corridors in East Portland, over 6 miles in length. 122nd Avenue serves as a critical backbone for many neighborhood centers. It provides important travel connections to essential jobs, services, and other community destinations. Additionally, many disadvantaged communities live and work nearby, as the street intersects one of the most racially and ethnically diverse areas in the city and the state. 122nd is designated as a high crash corridor for pedestrians and people biking or driving. Many intersections also have high crash rates, substandard infrastructure for non-auto modes like narrow bike lanes that conflict with turn lanes at major signalized intersections, narrow and substandard sidewalks, and pedestrian crossings that are too far apart creates a difficult and stressful environment for people walking, biking, rolling, or accessing public transit. And specifically, we see that many transit stops do not have benches or other amenities, which makes 122nd less usable and functional. It is crucial to invest in improving stops to attract more people to utilize public transit. In addition to the maintenance and upkeep of stops, the trips to set spaces must feel comfortable for pedestrians. 122nd is less attractive to people using it because there's limited vegetation and trees. Moreover, the lack of shade is worsened by the size of the pedestrian boundaries. For example, the average distance between pedestrian crossing improvements like signals or pedestrian islands on 122nd is 935 feet, about 4 blocks, and it sustains a car center and hostile environment. Between 2015 and 2021, 16 people lost their lives to transportation violence on 122nd. 6 were pedestrians, 1 person was biking, and 9 were people driving. 122nd must provide safety and convenience to the diverse population that it serves. GTT fully supports the proposed safety improvements that will improve conditions for pedestrians and people biking and taking the bus, and that will reduce high vehicle speeds. The improvements will help to address the current issues on 122nd Avenue and increase safety for all modes, especially vulnerable road users in a high equity area of Portland. For these reasons, I ask that you approve this application. Thank you so much for your time.
That concludes invited testimony, Mayor.
Very good. Thanks for all of you for showing up and testifying today. We certainly appreciate that. We know everybody's busy, but these are important projects. So thanks for your great work. Commissioner Mapps, you first, then Commissioner Rubio.
Okay. Thank you. I think technically Rubio might be in front of me, but as long as I'm unmuted, I can go. And thanks, Commissioner Rubio, for letting me sneak in front of you. I just have two questions. Let me start out my comments by saying I support all these projects. Glad to see us apply for these grants. And let me start with the Central East Side Railroad study. Like probably every Portlander, I have gotten stuck behind trains there often. It would be excited to see a solution emerge. I'm also trying to imagine what a solution would even look like. I don't know if there's anyone here who can give us a sense of what the possibilities might look like. I certainly have spent hours pondering how to make this go away. I don't know if Mark or Caitlin, who might be in a position to comment on that, or if it's just too early.
Commissioner Mapps, it's really too early. It's why we want to do the study. There have been various schemes to grade separate the crossings that are closer to Brooklyn Yard at 8th and 12th over the years. The series of crossings through the core of the Central East Side are really hard, and we need to really think. The reason we're not applying for construction money for the crossings where we might have better defined plans already is because we want to think about it in the context of the whole stretch and really understand how UP's operations will change over time, how their train links are changing, how those delays affect our system, and then come up with the best plans we can, because it is a complex knot to untie. So I wouldn't want to presuppose the outcomes of the study, but there are some grade separation ideas. And as we move further to the north, there has been less study of it to date. And we want to think about those things together before we make what will be very expensive investments in the system.
Great, thank you. Second and last question. It would be helpful if you could pull up the slide from your presentation, which deals with deaths and injuries on 122nd. Is it easy to get to that slide? Thank you very much. And looking at this, I was just really struck by the number of serious injuries and fatalities, specifically at Stark and 122nd. That really jumps out there. I know we have lots of plans to improve 122nd, and I hope that we get this grant that will allow us to make some improvements there. But the number of crashes and injuries and frankly deaths that we see in the space is kind of astounding. And I hope even if we don't get the funding for this project that we take a close look at what's happening there and make some improvements. I don't know what it means, but that's obviously unacceptable. I guess that's more of a statement than a question. So we can either let it lie, or if someone has a response, I welcome it.
We will be working on the crossing at Stark through the Safer Outer Stark project, which is funded and moving into design. I'm looking at hoping someone chats me the exact date, but I think it's actually going to construction in 2023, the next few months, he says. So that intersection will be addressed through that Safer Outer Stark project, which is already funded and moving to construction.
Great, I'm glad to hear that. And thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for being on top of that problem.
Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you. So thanks, Commissioner Mapps. You asked one of my questions, so I don't need to ask it about the rail, the tracks. But I do want to just also lift up and appreciate the work of PBOT and Commissioner Hardesty and making sure that we take advantage of these really great opportunities before us for funding. My question is about the actual federal infrastructure funding opportunities. Is this the only time that we're going to be able to apply, or what is the landscape for going back for this funding, and over what period of time?
Right, the short answer is we're really in the first year of a five-year cycle under the bipartisan infrastructure law. One of the things this year, there was this kind of a little bit crazy making is not the right word, but just a really intense process where notice of funding opportunities were coming out on multiple grants, you know, every other couple of weeks. What we're hearing is that in this next year, they're going to try to have it be more of a coordinated effort that happens maybe sort of in the first quarter of next year, consolidating some of the grant requests. So hopefully we'll be coming back to City Council on a more regular basis, but at least once a year, probably multiple times, we'll be coming back and being able to highlight these opportunities. But the feds are trying to have a more streamlined process that will help, I think, local governments and public involvement in ways it's a little bit hard when there's every month a different notice of funding opportunity coming out for new and changed programs. I'm not sure that answers the question, but we'll definitely be back, and there's lots of opportunities in the future.
That's really great to hear. So I just want to make sure I'm reflecting what I heard. So there's many more opportunities coming forward for at least the next 5 years.
I think the only thing I'd want to just couch that with is that, you know, at the end of the day, if we get a couple of our big bridge projects funded, I mean, the kinds of ones like we talked about today, and some of these investments on streets like 122nd, that will be, like the Commissioner Hardesty was saying, transformational to our city, but still leaves us with a lot of need. So we're as well positioned as we have been, thanks to City Council and lots of good work from community and staff for these grant funds that are available. It's still gonna leave us with some need, but lots of opportunities to address some of our biggest problems.
Great, thank you.
Very good. Colleagues, any further questions? Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this item?
We had two people sign up. I don't know that they're here. Aaron Ford and then Robert Butler, but I believe they are not on the line.
All right. Very good. This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Hardesty.
Again, I want to thank all the incredible, hardworking staff at PBAT, including Mark, Kristen, and Caitlin. And Megan, don't want to leave you out, Megan. We have done some incredible work under some very challenging times, but the result is that we're moving these partnerships forward. I heard Commissioner Rubio ask, like, what other opportunities are there? I will say that we are well positioned because we continue to go to Congress as a united front, and our congressional delegation finds it much easier to support our ask because we are normally very united in what we're asking for. So I will also say every election cycle matters about whether or not those funds will be available in the future. But what we know today is that it's a very competitive process. And we believe that we are very well positioned to seek as much financial support as possible in these grants that are moving forward. I am happy to vote aye, and I look forward to the good results that will come from these grant applications.
Maps.
I want to thank Commissioner Hardesty and PBOT for moving this item forward. I vote aye.
Rubio.
I too want to thank Commissioner Hardesty for all her great work here, as well as PBOT team. Wonderful work. Thank you for the diligent work that you put in to kind of sift through all these opportunities. It sounds like it's very complex and time consuming, and you do it so well. So just thank you for all this great work. Really excited about, you know, the potential for these transformative changes coming to the community. I'm very happy to vote aye.
Wheeler.
Well, I'll extend my thanks as well to PBOT, Commissioner Hardesty, and her team. I also want to extend a thanks to the Biden administration for recognizing that there is a withering infrastructure need across the country. And you know, many of these are basic safety and mobility infrastructure needs that we have. Some of them have been identified for a long time, and I'm glad that these funds are available. And I hope that we are successful in achieving our objective of receiving these funds. I suspect that we're in a pretty good position. As Commissioner Hardesty indicated, we have strong delegation support. We have our regional partnerships in place here. We have strong community partnerships in place. So it seems like we've sort of got all of the magic formula boxes checked here in terms of what I would expect the federal government to be looking for in these applications. So I vote aye, And let's keep doing the good work and keep our fingers crossed and hope that we're successful. I look forward to celebrating. I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item, also a time certain item, please, 749, and that is a proclamation.
Proclaim September 9 through 18, 2022 to be Welcoming Week.
Well, this is a great opportunity for us to celebrate an important aspect of our community. I'm proud to support this with Commissioner Hardesty to be bringing this forward as a proclamation. And with that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Hardesty.
Well, thank you, Mayor. I really appreciate your partnership and the Welcoming Week proclamation. As the commissioner overseeing the Office of Community and Civic Life, today I am pleased to join my colleagues in recognizing September 9th through September 18th of 2022 as Welcoming Week in the City of Portland. Welcoming Week is an annual event led by the nonprofit Welcoming America to celebrate the values that unite us as neighbors and to make our communities more welcoming to all those who call Portland home. The formal proclamation highlights the contributions of immigrants and refugees in Portland and reaffirms Portland as a sanctuary city. This continues our work to make Portland a place where everyone feels welcome, safe, represented, and supported. It is our responsibility as a sanctuary city to stand with our immigrant and refugee community members to let them know that you are welcomed here, regardless of your immigration status, race, ethnicity, place of origin, language, religion, income, and any other factors. Due to crises abroad, thousands of Afghan and Ukrainian immigrants and refugees of Community and Civic Life's Immigrant and Refugee Program helps educate the public on immigrant issues and is an important point of contact for these communities to engage with city government as they adjust to life in a new place and build community. The program and its advisory committee, the New Portlanders Policy Commission, also brings immigrant and refugee voices to the table and partners with Portland's communities to help create equitable services, resources, and policies in the city of Portland. I want to give a huge thank you to the immigrant and refugee coordinator, Mariah Clamico, for organizing these Welcoming Week events and being a strong advocate for equitable services for all Portlanders. I also want to thank partners like the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, Catholic Charities, Lutheran Community Services, and Ecumenical Ministries for the important work they do in our communities every day. Thanks for joining us to celebrate, educate, and build a stronger community at Welcoming Week. Lastly, I want to invite everyone listening to join the City of Portland and our diverse communities for the many Welcoming Week events around Portland from Friday, September 9th to Sunday, the 18th, including our kickoff event this Friday at Ventura Park in East Portland. All are welcomed in the City of Portland. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. And we have some guest speakers to hear this morning. Mia Sabanovich from the New Portlanders Policy Commission. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and honorable City Council members. My name is Mia Sabanovich, and I'm very honored to be here and speak on behalf of Welcoming Week as a commissioner from the New Portland Policy Commission. Today, I'm going to tell you two stories about my life that will highlight the importance and power of human voice. I was 11, and it was a long summer night filled with bright stars that illuminated our front and backyard and almost made one forget that we had no power and the water was extremely scarce. It was a night full of fear and silence. I clutched onto my mom's clammy palms as I peered through a small window into our front yard, and I could make 8 large grizzly men with automatic weapons moving around in haste, searching for something. I raised my gaze to meet with my mom's, and then she said it. Don't speak. Hide. If they hear your voice, they'll kill you, or worse. A voiceless 11-year-old Bosnian girl survived genocide torn Bosnia through traumatic escape into the United States of America. And then I was 12 and excited to start middle school. Everything had been so new and different, foreign and unknown. And as I settled back into my class, I tried to sit in the back and tried to avoid any eye contact as I didn't know all the English words. A boy much smaller in size than me and sweet smelling, almost like warm maple syrup, asked me for something. I couldn't figure out what he wanted and I panicked. So you can't speak? Therefore you don't know? Are you stupid or something? I quickly learned English words to have a voice, to use it in my defense. What I'm asking City Council to do today is stop speaking for so-called voiceless and start working alongside of them. Make space for them and make sure their voices are heard and welcome. Give space by pulling a chair during our city budgeting efforts, our capital design and planning efforts to ensure that all Portlanders, especially new Portlanders and refugee communities, have a voice. A promise of voice was given to New Portlanders community through an ordinance 187805. New Portland Policy Commission was created with intention to integrate immigrant and refugee community voices into the City of Portland policies and decision-making. A group of 25 powerful, passionate, diverse community leaders that are immigrants and refugees that live, work, play, and pray in the City of Portland have found themselves voiceless when it comes to their ability to integrate immigrant and refugee community needs into the City of Portland policy and decision-making. We can do better. We can all engage and create space for each other. I urge the City Council to leverage the wealth of NPPC to make space, to make voices louder, so we can succeed together. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Maya. We appreciate it. And next, we're going to hear from Harold Adiambo, who is a community advocate. Good morning, Harold.
Hey, good morning, Mayor Ted Wheeler. Thank you so much, and commissioners. Thank you for giving me this opportunity for getting to talk to you today. I'm here, I do represent also, just as Mayor talked about, a lot of the communities. I represent a lot of the African and immigrant communities. So, and again, you know, once again, I'd like to say thanks, you know, for having this welcoming week. The thing that I'd like to say is, you know, I think something like this welcoming week, this is something that should have happened like maybe like even 50 years ago, you know, because the immigrants and the refugees have not just been here like for the last 2 years. So they've been here like for the longest time ever. So, but, you know, getting to honor and have this is something that I would say is a very good step forward as we get to move along, as you get to hear Mia's stories. So I get to put on many different hats within the community and many other different things with a lot of different organizations. But the other thing that I'd like to tell you is a lot of things that I've gotten to see over time. One of the things that I also get to do, I'm also a state registered interpreter. So I get to see a lot of different things that the immigrants face, especially those ones who don't get to speak English. So when you get to hear the horrendous stories of things they talk about, whatever they've gotten to pass through, and, you know, just making sure that having the immigrants have support, I think is one big thing. And, you know, giving for the City of Portland, giving this opportunity, I think is something that is good. And it would be steps towards getting to make sure that the immigrants and refugees are recognized for a lot of the things that they get to do. One thing that when I get to hear a lot of things that the City of Portland does, it would be my hope that one of these fine days that we can even have a center that is predominantly, you know, dedicated to the immigrants and refugees, so that they can also be able to get to they can also be able to get to showcase their culture. You know, these are things that people don't know, people don't understand, because like there are so many things when people get to do things and all that, people don't understand this, you know, like who's this man with this such a long name and that you cannot be able to get to pronounce and all that. But getting to know and understand the immigrants, getting to know and understand their culture, where they can be able to get to showcase, to prove to you and get and let you know that, you know, when they come here, they come with many different things that they can offer, and they come with many different aspects of things that you can also be able to learn and understand. And so getting to have this partnership and getting to have this going on, I would say it's a step in the right directions. And definitely for me, what I would say is, I would thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. And we look forward into working in a lot of collaboration with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. We'll now move into council remarks. Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Colleagues, I'm delighted to join you in declaring September 9th through September 18th to be welcoming week here in Portland. I'd also like to thank Commissioner Hardesty for bringing this item forward. I also want to thank Mia for sharing her powerful story. I also appreciate Harold for being here today and his advocacy on behalf of Portland's immigrant community. I feel like we should also recognize folks like Maria Morad and Marco over at Civic Life and the New Portlanders Policy Commission for their advocacy on behalf of Portland's immigrant communities. And I also want to share a personal note. This year, Welcoming Week resonates deeply. Today, we have more than 82 million people around the world who are refugees adrift looking for a place to call home. They come from places like Syria, Venezuela, South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Somalia, Ukraine, and of course, Afghanistan. I'm glad that Portland has an opportunity to welcome all of these folks. And I'm also glad that this year's Welcoming Week celebrations includes both in-person and virtual events. In particular, I'm looking forward to opening ceremonies for Welcoming Week, which will be held on September 9th at Ventura Park. I'm also excited for Citizenship Day on September 16th at PCC's Cascade Campus. I also would be remiss if I didn't put a plug in for one of my favorite Portland events of the year, the Festival of Nations Street Fair on September 17th. That'll be at 146th and Division. Of course, you will not want to miss Multicultural Children's Festival, which will be held on September 18th at Ventura Park. And of course, we are also looking forward to the return of My People's Market on September 17th and 18th at the OMSI parking lot. I encourage all Portlanders to participate in these events, and I urge every Portlander to join me in making Portland a community that welcomes all. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio.
Thank you. I want to thank all our community and employee leaders and folks from the New Portlanders Policy Commission for being a critical part of our city's advocacy voice on behalf of immigrants and refugees. And since I've been here at the city, this week has become special to me because it reminds me too of my family's immigrant experience in Oregon and the incredibly important role that welcoming community makes. It can literally be a significant quality of life and feeling of safety difference. And I think about how determined my parents and my grandparents, all my uncles and aunts were to ensure that their children had opportunities that they didn't, and how much love and sacrifice that takes for immigrant communities who choose this path for their own families. So I'm very appreciative of the stories that we've heard. I'm appreciative of all the stories that are like these. And I want to recognize also the hardship that immigrants and refugees have faced and continue to face, like the recent Texas action that further targets asylum seekers So, you know, we need to reject these actions, but more than that, we need to operate within a new paradigm of radical inclusion, and also one that has the presence of justice in our city as well. And this means ensuring that all our immigrant and refugee communities are engaged in decision-making that impacts their lives. And that's why this commission and our employees and our community leaders are so important, as is the work that they do every single day. And I agree with Mia's words that we can do better, and we will do better. And we owe this to all the families who are still sacrificing for a better life and better opportunities, like my grandparents and parents did as well. So thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Thank you, Civic Life. And thank you for, thank you, New Portlanders Policy Commission, for your great work and your deep dedication to our community.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Before I read the proclamation, I want to thank the Office of Community and Civic Life, especially Maria Clemenko and Marco Mejia with the Immigrant and Refugee Program for drafting this proclamation. I also want to thank the Office of Equity and Human Rights for their consultation during this process. And finally, I want to thank Welcoming America and the dozens of community leaders, activists, artists, performers, and volunteers who will be participating in the many events over the course of Welcoming Week. And now I'll read a proclamation on behalf of the Portland City Council. Whereas the City of Portland recognizes immigrants and refugees contribute to a culturally vibrant, prosperous, and multicultural community. And whereas, regardless of where we're born or how we identify, we are Portlanders and our lives are interdependent. By fostering a welcoming environment for all, regardless of immigration status, race, ethnicity, place of origin, English language proficiency, religion, income, gender, sexual orientation, differing abilities, age, and other factors, we enhance Portland's health, economic prosperity, and well-being for current and future generations. And whereas on June 17th, 2020, all City of Portland commissioners voted to approve a resolution that created a strict no tolerance policy for racism, discrimination, and bias in the workplace, and continues to encourage all city employees and services to operate with the values of anti-racism, equity, collaboration, communication, fiscal responsibility, and transparency. And whereas Portland's spirit of unity, safety, and belonging begins with us, and we must continue to act like a sanctuary city where everyone feels valued and safe. And whereas all Portlanders and Portland institutions must commit to helping immigrant and refugee communities beyond this proclamation and make Portland a welcoming place for all. And whereas in the last year, the City of Portland has received several thousand Afghan and Ukrainian parolees and will continue to see our refugee, asylum seeker, and other immigration communities continue to grow. And whereas Portland is a member of Welcoming America, a national nonprofit and a network of local governments and nonprofits around the nation and the world to pledge to become a welcoming place for new and long-term residents alike. And whereas the City of Portland is once again leading the way by hosting Welcoming Week for the second year with the theme, Where We Belong. Now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim September 9th, 2022 through September 18th, 2022 to be Welcoming Week in Portland, and do further declare the City of Portland, Oregon to be a community that welcomes all. Thank you. That completes the time certain agenda. Looks like all we have left, Keelan, is the one item that was pulled from consent, item 752.
Authorize competitive solicitation and execution of price agreements for surveying and aerial mapping services in support of the Portland Bureau of Transportation for an amount not to exceed $6,300,000.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Mayor, this is on consent. This is pulled off, so.
Who pulled this?
It was pulled by Robert Butler. He's no longer on the call.
Is there any further discussion on this item?
No.
This is an emergency ordinance. Call the roll.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
I want to thank Commissioner Hardesty for sponsoring this. I'll point out that this not only benefits PBOT, BES, and I believe Parks also participates in this important mapping program. Efforts like this are part of the tools we need in order to make the city run efficiently. For these reasons and more, I vote aye.
Rubio.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted and we are adjourned.